And by the way, when we prioritize things, it also has to do with not the 10 guys that's going to tweet me something, because that's only 10 people. That's got to do with the thousands of people that are actually doing stuff on the platform. So sometimes when we give a low priority to a project, it's because we don't see much traction on the platform. And so I sort of resent the Twitter bully thing where, you know, you have 10 guys on Twitter that tell you to do something and then you have to do it. And honestly, it's a fucking pain in my ass, because I open my Twitter and I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, oh, we haven't done this. Oh, these guys are right. And then I check it and there are 100 requests in our platform for this when there are thousands of tens of thousands for other coins. So, you know, I appreciate the help. I appreciate when people are pushing projects to us. We read everything. We try to do everything. But we cannot do everything.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Masari's Unqualified Opinions. First, though, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors for the live stream. We've got Luca. Save money this tax season with Luca Tax, the only time-tested crypto tax software. They help you calculate cap gains and losses and see the results using three different accounting methods side by side. You only pay if you want to see their detailed reports and submit your tax forms with their software. You can head on over to lukatax.com. That's Luca, L-U-K-K-A, tax.com, using the promo code Masari Tax to save money and do your taxes the right way. We've got Bitstamp as well, the original global cryptocurrency exchange. Since 2011, Bitstamp's been the preferred exchange for serious traders and investors, with over 4 million customers, including top institutions. Their platform is a professional-grade engine for traders, NASDAQ matching engine, some of the best APIs in the industry, and advanced trade view interface on both web and mobile. You can download Bitstamp's app from the App Store and Google Play, or visit bitstamp.net/pro to start trading today. That's bitstamp.net/pro. Then there's crypto.com. Crypto.com knows times are tough, so they've introduced three different measures to help their community using crypto.com app and credit card. They're waiving the 3.5% credit card fee on all crypto purchases, also offering 10% back when you use their Visa card on food and groceries. And as always, you can buy gift cards on the crypto.com app for merchants like Whole Foods, Safeway, Burger King, and more, with 20% back on food and an additional 10% back on groceries. So go ahead and download the crypto.com app today. And then last but certainly not least, there's Kingdom Trust. If you own Bitcoin and have a retirement account, but you don't own Bitcoin in that account, what exactly are you doing? I've checked out Choice by Kingdom Trust. Encourage you to do the same. You have Bitcoin, stonks, ETFs, gold, more, all in one retirement account. And the first 1,000 users to open a Choice IRA will receive some free Bitcoin. So join the waiting list at retirewithchoice.com/Masari. retirewithchoice.com/Masari.
This podcast is presented by Blockworks Group, one of the top blockchain events and media production companies I've worked with. For exclusive content and events that could help you with insight into the crypto and blockchain space, check them out at blockworksgroup.io, and you will not be disappointed.
All righty. Quick and painless. Thank you for supporting our sponsors and for joining us again. Without further ado, I want to welcome Pascal, who I have not spoken with in quite some time. Excited to get back reconnected. Hi, Pascal. How are you?
Ryan, I'm great. Thanks.
It's been too long. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you too. It's been long, indeed.
It looks like we're both operating out of dungeons right now. So this is perfect, because we're talking about secure storage and we're talking about someone that really should be in a secure location, based on the brand that you're representing. So maybe for starters, Pascal, where are you in the world right now? Are you in Europe?
Europe. I'm in France, in Paris, at home. This is not the Ledger dungeon. This is just home. So from Paris, recording live. So happy to be here with everyone.
Very good. Pascal, for those of you that don't actually know your background, maybe start off just by talking a little bit about how you got into crypto, what led you to that point historically, because I'm not sure how many people know, Ledger was actually venture number two for you in the crypto infrastructure space, dating way back to 2012, 2013, somewhere in there when we first got to know each other. So can you talk a little bit more about the journey and some of the work that you did with Kaiko and then now Ledger?
Sure. I started my career in 2000 with the internet. I did online advertising actually for the first part of my career. Listed a company at the NASDAQ in 2013 called Criteo for around $2 billion. And from advertising, sort of was soul searching for something new, and was working with Index Ventures out of London, doing entrepreneur in residence type of stuff with a VC. And they kept on talking about Bitcoin, and I didn't really understood much at the time, and met with Vences Cesares from Zappo, who came to Index to present what he was doing with Zappo and what Bitcoin was. I thought that Vences was extremely convincing. I think Vences convinced probably a lot of people that joined the industry at the time. That was in 2014, and then I knew that I wanted to do Bitcoin. I just didn't know what it was that I wanted to do really. And I started a company called Challenger Deep at the time. And Challenger Deep is this trench that you have near the Philippines, and it's 12 kilometer deep, and it's vastly unexplored. And I thought it was the kind of challenge that was in front of me with Bitcoin, hence the name Challenger Deep. But it's very hard to pronounce, and I didn't really have a cool domain name, so the product name became Kaiko, Kaiko.com, and we decided to do market data, because market data or data in general is very important for any business that is new business or new world that is being built. And I thought data was critically missing, and so Kaiko was designed for this. It runs still today, and it's almost Subiron now, who's CEO, and I'm a board member, and Kaiko is doing really well in market data today. But you're right, the second thing that I did was to look for security, because I thought data was missing, but security was also critical. And you give me more credit than I really have, because I sort of joined Bitcoin mid-2014. And so it was just after Mt. Gox. And I thought, all this is good and well, and Bitcoin is amazing, but if you can't secure it, then there is really no point. And then I met with Eric Larchevêque, Nicolas Bacca, Thomas France, all these guys in Paris, and I was really trying to figure out, the security issue. And they pitched me with a simple idea of using the chip and pin technology, the chip that we have on credit cards, and say that we would use that to secure crypto secrets and your Bitcoin secrets. And I thought it was a brilliant idea, because actually chip and pin is a great technology, works really well, and I thought that to secure crypto secrets, hardware is probably the best thing to do. And they convinced me, and so I was the first investor in Ledger. I sort of led the seed round. They were kind enough to give me a board seat to go with that investment. And so I've been with the Ledger team from, inception sort of, and was appointed CEO, almost a year ago now, a bit more than a year ago.
Excellent. So one of the topics that I wanted to cover is around where the aggregation points are in your mind in crypto infrastructure companies, right? So exchanges are probably the natural top of mind entities that are the onboarding ramp for users and in many cases the primary interface for new users coming into the system. And they in turn have built their own wallets, their own staking services, number of other ancillary tools that help keep those users locked in to their ecosystems. But there's also this kind of paradoxical saying of not your keys, not your crypto within the broader ecosystem. And so there is an argument to be made that the wallets and the most secure and usable tools that people could use to actually manage these assets and hold them in self-custody should maybe long-term be the aggregation points and the platforms, upon which many millions and potentially billions of users could actually access crypto services and truly be their own banks. where's the disconnect, and how have you thought about extending from that hardware wallet start, which is really just about secure self-custody, into more of the platform play, where you want your users to be able to self-custody a variety of assets, but also interact with those assets on their own accord, without having to necessarily move assets to a third-party service that might be specializing in something like staking or more frictionless exchange.
Yeah. So, look, I think it's a great question. I think, you know, in your question lies some of the answer that we'll give. But I think, you know, for start, you know, there is a big vision that if you think about our digital lives today, you know, we don't own our digital lives. All of our data, everything that we are digitally, is owned by a third party. What was fascinating with Bitcoin is, you know, suddenly you could own a digital token. You know, you could have your private key, and suddenly you own something that is unique, and that is really a true revolution. That is really something that, you know, when I understood this for the first time, I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. Because if you think about that this way, then you know that in the future, there will be what we call at Ledger the critical digital assets. So those digital assets are really critical to you that you would want to possess and not delegate to a third party. Or actually, you can still delegate to a third party if you want, but now you actually have the option to possess it. And we believe that's very important. And, you know, similarly to Bitcoin is value, but you can think about other things for the future, like identity. You can think about, you know, tokenization of luxury objects. I mean, there are many things that the industry is already working on that will be these tokens that represent a digital asset that you want to keep for yourself. And, you know, I think behind this vision, there is a almost like a philosophical question of whether you want to stay in that world where you own nothing and, you know, you delegate ownership to third parties that you don't know, that you don't necessarily trust, such as Facebook, Google, to name a few. Or suddenly now, do you want to own your assets and eventually delegate to the parties that you want to delegate to in a certain shape or form? And so, of course, you know, at Ledger, we value the latter, meaning that we believe that you should own what's important to you and eventually delegate to others what you own. And so, not your keys, not your crypto today, but tomorrow will be not your keys, not your sort of everything that is your digital life that is that will be increasingly important, I think, that vision for the future. And so our view now is, now that you own your keys, you should be able to go through the journey of your crypto or your tokens through your Ledger experience. And so therefore, you know, at Ledger now, we have started to implement a series of services so user can actually hold their token and protect their crypto with their Ledger, but we want to make it very easy to use also for users. So just very recently, we launched like a few staking delegation services. So now for Tezos, we launched Cosmos, I think, yesterday, Tron, and then there will be a few others in the future. But suddenly you can do sort of everything from your Ledger Live, owning your keys, but then you can delegate your staking, which is a very, very smooth user experience. Actually, as a result, we have now close to 100 million Tezos that have been delegated through the Ledger Live platform, which is actually quite a significant number of Tezos. So meaning that it's really easy to use and people are actually using it. Also recently, we've integrated a buy feature with Coinify as our first partner, which is starting to work really well. And so people now can sort of buy Bitcoin with their credit card or with a wire transfer. And so that's not new because you can actually do that anywhere else. But what's new is actually the Bitcoin that you'll be buying through Ledger Live actually end up on your hardware wallet. And so you have a very seamless user experience where in the end, the coins end up on your hardware wallet and you possess the private key. So you don't have to go through an exchange or through a third party, buy the coin, and then do the difficult thing of transferring the coin back to your hardware wallet to possess your private keys. So this is where we're heading. And, you know, this is really the beginning. You know, I think in an imminent future, in the next couple of years, a great decentralized value proposition will vastly outperform any centralized value proposition that are out there in the market. And so probably a few years ago, you know, using Coinbase was the best thing really that you could do when you entered crypto, because it was really easy to use. I think in a couple of years, you would want to use some decentralized value proposition, such as Ledger and or others that are being built right now.
Mm-hmm. I think the question is always universality of coverage, and you know, when new assets get supported, and it's probably not even the 80-20 rule now, but more like 99-1 in terms of where user demand is. How do you think about asset support and kind of extending coverage for base layer blockchains? Because ERC-20, you know, that's pretty straightforward, right? Anything that's part of a common standard, you know, if you support the base chain, you can support, you know, the layer two assets on top of it. But there's two different types of issues. One is just the infrastructure issue and the compatibility issue with the hardware wallet. The other is more of a kind of front end abstraction. If you are talking about like 721s or ERC-20s in terms of how you can actually manage those assets and do so in a little bit more intuitive way, in many cases, not even playing with the private key or needing to access the Ledger, you know, device. But what are the maybe two most important paths for growing? One, base layer change. You mentioned Cosmos, you mentioned Tezos and some of the other layer ones, and then additional layer two assets that might sit on top of them.
Yeah. Well, I think this is, again, this is a very critical issue, the one that you're describing now. And I think it's, again, a testimony to the fact that the industry is really young, because I just approved yesterday 7 more headcounts to actually deal with that problem, to join Ledger sort of ASAP, because it's an ever-growing problem. You have more teams, more assets, more features that comes with coins now. Before it was just send and receive. Now you have send, receive, staking, et cetera, et cetera. And you have more in the future, like, you know, smart contracts, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, it's part of our mission to make it secure and easy to use. And so you have now to not just integrate a coin and send receive, but you have to integrate much more in order to make the coin easy to use. And so we scaled up the team from, like, I don't know, 2 people that we might have had at the time to almost 16 now. And I'm telling you that we just recruited 7 more. So it's just we need to put a lot of energy and a lot of developer time in order to sort of keep up with the pace of the industry. And for me right now, and every time we say we support a new coin, it's funny to watch the comments on Twitter, because you have all the other coins that we don't support. And, you know, the supporters of this coin coming and say, you know, when VeChain or, you know, any other coin like that. And so it's sort of a never ending game. And then you have Libra coming, and then you have many other coins that are coming. So, you know, for us, it's a question of, one, brute force. So having the resources necessary internally in order to develop those coins. 2, it's a question of, you know, sort of ranking the coins and, you know, ranking what's the most important in the industry, what we feel is the most important in the industry right now. And we start to have quite a sophisticated way of doing it based on, you know, the demand that we see in Ledger Live, the demand that we see with our customer support, with, you know, what we see in the market cap, et cetera. We have a metric system that we put in place to figure out what is the next coin that we will integrate. We're also working on a third party program. So we have a few teams now that we're working with that are sort of coding new coins all the way to a Ledger Live integration. You know, it will be a never ending problem for the industry until the industry probably sort itself out, meaning that, you know, I probably don't believe that there will be 50,000 coins in 3 years. You know, that would be, you know, like the main projects, and then, you know, many other coins. But you can see that right now the world is forming. So, you know, for us, it's not really a question of making too much choice on this. We want to support as much as we can within reason and within our, you know, the possibilities that we have, the bandwidth that we have. But we believe also that in the next 2, 3, 4 years, there will be less coins to support. I mean, some coin projects will not find traction, and others will grow. So that's what we think will happen. But right now, we are working on the problem and fixing it.
So a couple of comments here in the group chat, talking about third-party integrations and kind of how you think about prioritizing, you know, plugins versus doing things in-house. And I think it's touching a little bit on this issue of platform extensibility, but beyond just ledgers and in-house capacity. So how do you think about whether it's third-party staking services or application-specific services or cold exchanging technology, whether to insource it or rely on either third parties or even open source tools or protocols to help with the growth of the Ledger Communities platform?
Yeah, we think, so I will answer that question in a second, but I see in the group chat that I didn't open, sorry. Someone says 4 minutes ago, funny, you're talking about all these things like how staking from Ledger is great new thing when StakeNet submitted the code to Ledger to do exactly that over a year ago, and you still haven't merged their requests. So I'm going to answer that question because I actually see a lot of that action on Twitter of people pointing the finger and say, oh, I told you to do something a year ago and you guys still haven't done it. So, you know, first of all, it's not because you tell me that I have to do something that I will do it, because we have an internal process. We have many things that we need to do. I've actually hired, I don't know, 100 engineers in the past 12 months, and we're not doing nothing. We're actually working really, really hard. And so if we haven't done that, it's because we were doing other things that we thought were probably more important. I'm sorry that you delivered the code a year ago, but I don't think that you got any commitment from the Ledger side that we will implement it in any shape or form. Now, that being said, you know, I've pinged that GitHub already linked to my team. They're aware, but like I said, we have a prioritization process, and this is not in a high priority right now. So we will eventually do it. Maybe it's going to stay there for another few months. And by the way, when we prioritize things, it's also has to do with not the 10 guys that's going to tweet me something, because that's only 10 people. That's got to do with the thousands of people that are actually doing stuff on the platform. And so sometimes when we give a low priority to a project, it's because we don't see much traction on the platform. And so I sort of resent the, Twitter bully thing where, you know, you have 10 guys on Twitter that tell you to do something and then you have to do it. And honestly, it's a fucking pain in my ass because I open my Twitter and I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, oh, we haven't done this. Oh, these guys are right. And then I check it and there are 100 requests in our platform for this when there are thousands of tens of thousands for other coins. So, you know, I appreciate the help. I appreciate when people are pushing projects to us. We read everything. We try to do everything, but we cannot do everything. When it comes to your question, and in 1 second,
yeah, and I intentionally stayed away from the specifics of the comments and tried to filter it in a way that would be a little bit more abstracted versus get into a very singular debate. I know why you wanted to point it out,
but this one I wanted to point out because I didn't want to reply on Twitter.
Yeah.
I didn't want to reply on Twitter because then it's a Twitter war, and I fucking. But here I thought, hey, why not? Like, you know, because I had that on my chest for quite a while, as you can feel. Yeah. But the real answer and the way that we want to take this, but it's hard. It's actually hard to do decentralized technology that is open. Is very, very hard, open and secure, because, you know, people say, oh, but everything should be open, etc. And so, but sometimes when you are too open, you can sacrifice a little security. And we've seen that in the market where Trezor has the probably most open model, but yet it's probably not the most secure. And so, you know, you sacrifice security for openness. And, you know, that's okay. Maybe that's a trade-off that you're happy to do. And people should think and worry about their security and maybe the trade-offs that they're that they can do. And, you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't use Trezor, but I'm just saying that when you use Trezor, you know, you need to understand how it works, and you know, and if it works for you. But you cannot be dogmatic and thinking, oh, because it's all open, then it's great. And so, you know, for us, it's a question of security and being as open as possible, but within the boundaries of being the most secure or absolutely secure. And so, in that regard, we you know, we're working really hard to build as big of a community around us. And back to that TechNet example, you know, if there are third-party developers that feel that it's really hard to work with us, they can send me an email, pascal@ledger.com, pascal@ledger.com, and I will try to see how we can, you know, sort of fast-track those type of relationships, because they're really important to us. We've done a lot recently in order to really have third-party developers to integrate more into the platform. And so this is really where I see the future going. Like, you know, it's impossible for Ledger to hire 1,000 of developers just to do the coin integration. We rely much more on the community than on ourselves. We will do the security layer always. The dungeon will review every app that will be posted on Ledger, because that's the most important thing that we have to do. But to work with third parties, sure. So TechNet guys, like, send me an email, pascal@ledger.com.
We've got Luca. Save money this tax season with Luca Tax, the only time-tested crypto tax software. They help you calculate cap gains and losses and see the results using three different accounting methods side by side. You only pay if you want to see their detailed reports and submit your tax forms with their software. You can head on over to lukatax.com. That's Luca, L-U-K-K-A, tax.com, using the promo code Masari Tax to save money and do your taxes the right way. We've got Bitstamp as well, the original global cryptocurrency exchange. Since 2011, Bitstamp's been the preferred exchange for serious traders and investors, with over 4 million customers, including top institutions. Their platform is professional grade engine for traders, NASDAQ matching engine, some of the best APIs in the industry, and advanced trade view interface on both web and mobile. You can download Bitstamp's app from the App Store and Google Play, or visit bitstamp.net/pro to start trading today. That's bitstamp.net/pro. Then there's crypto.com. Crypto.com knows times are tough, so they've introduced three different measures to help their community using crypto.com app and credit card. They're waiving the 3.5% credit card fee on all crypto purchases, also offering 10% back when you use their Visa card on food and groceries. And as always, you can buy gift cards on the crypto.com app for merchants like Whole Foods, Safeway, Burger King, and more, with 20% back on food and an additional 10% back on groceries. So go ahead and download the crypto.com app today. And then last but certainly not least, there's Kingdom Trust. If you own Bitcoin and have a retirement account, but you don't own Bitcoin in that account, what exactly are you doing? I've checked out Choice by Kingdom Trust. Encourage you to do the same. You have Bitcoin, stonks, ETFs, gold, more, all in one retirement account. And the first 1,000 users to open a Choice IRA will receive some free Bitcoin. So join the waiting list at retirewithchoice.com/Masari. retirewithchoice.com/Masari. What did you think? I'm not sure if you had a chance to dig into it, because it just came out maybe a week or so ago. The Coinbase Rosetta open source proposal and toolkit for actually integrating these blockchains. Is that something that you can build off of to reduce the friction of integrating with third-party chains, if not third-party application developers? Or how do you see initiatives like that in terms of relevance? Is that more for exchanges? You know, what can be borrowed there, or what can be contributed to, so that every single infrastructure company isn't kind of reinventing the wheel, and you do get closer to security best practices in an open model versus a walled garden like the Apple iOS model?
Yeah. So look, like I said, I mean, I don't have a specific answer to your question on that thing, but we are not dogmatic at Ledger. We're very pragmatic. So, you know, but being pragmatic means also we care about security. And so as long as we can guarantee our user security, we're really happy to use any kind of technology that can sort of fast track the work that we're trying to do. And that goes into, you know, the Ledger philosophy on doing things. So, you know, we're not against using third-party technology. We actually do for quite a bit of our stack. you know, we will just always control that last layer of security, and because we believe that's the most important thing. But now, if we can fast track the coin integration by using third party technology such as the one that you described, you know, sure, we'll do it every day, as long as we can use it in our technology stack. And you know, our technology stack has, you know, the hardware, the firmware, the software. So there are three layers, and there is Ledger Live, but there is also Ledger Vault, which is for you know, the product, that the SaaS product that we've designed for enterprise, and that's it looks the same, but technically speaking, it's slightly different. And so, you know, it's technology is just hard. So there's no, you know, there's no silver bullet to just like that solve every problem. And actually, it's quite a good thing in a way, because it forces you to choose things, not to do everything at the same time. It forces you to focus and to make sure that you can guarantee segregation, security, et cetera, et cetera. And so we are being very careful about what we do. And so sometimes we can sacrifice speed to security, and we'll always sacrifice speed to security.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a common refrain within crypto, because you're even if you're not a custodian in the sense that you own access to the keys, which is the case for exchanges, you're still providing infrastructure where if someone loses their keys, they're going to be very angry at the hardware or the system that either failed to take the appropriate security first mindset, or created a complex recovery process such that there was some avoidable user error. And that to me strikes me as one of the greatest challenges, maybe, because you are not an official custodian, but you have this massively important support apparatus that needs to be built so that people don't fuck things up themselves, right? And this actually applies, you know, this is not just a beginner thing, right? This applies to me. I'm going through this right now. You know, I knew that we had this conversation, so I haven't touched a couple of my ledgers that I know that I have to, you know, basically reaccess, you know, reformat and ultimately get a not insignificant amount of ETH that was returned via Shapeshift Prism contract when they shut it down kind of late last year, and I just didn't get around to it. And then way back from 2017, because I didn't want to deal with the tax consequences, Bitcoin Cash and the hard fork. And so this morning, I was very easily able to recover the ETH that was in the Shapeshift Prism contract and associated with that wallet. But then I had a sticking point with the Bitcoin Cash issue. And now this is 3-year-old hardware, right? It hasn't been updated. I see it in my account. I try to press send to shoot it over to you know, another wallet, whether it's Coinbase or whether it's another ledger or whomever. And for whatever reason, I hit send and it doesn't send. So my first reaction is, man, did I just, am I going to burn these? If I try to reinstall or kind of reformat and upgrade the firmware here, am I accidentally going to do something related to a 3-year-old issue? That was probably the biggest edge case in the history of crypto. And I have to imagine that that's where the lion's share of potential user error, kind of catastrophic loss, could come from your users. At the same time, you're not a bank, right? So how do you balance that very specific and very real problem that I'm sure many, especially of your earlier customers, have dealt with, and some of which, you know, the solutions are just now becoming apparent or just, you know, kind of gradually being released over time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're describing an industry problem. I mean, it's also a ledger problem, but it's a real industry problem. Suddenly, you're in charge of your security, but everything relies on 24 words, and where do you put those words? And then you're responsible for your own security, and it's really, you know, the parallel with gold is always very good. It's like, you know, if you're responsible for, you know, 5 kilos of gold at home, you know, suddenly it's a big responsibility. How do you deal with that? Like, you know, what kind of safe do you put? Like, suddenly you have to worry about the safe, where you put it, and what kind of code, and, you know, the plausible deniability if someone breaks into your house, you know, how long do they have to torture you until you give the code, et cetera, et cetera. But the good thing is with crypto, it will be in the end. So we're not there yet, but in the end, it will be easier to protect than gold from a technological standpoint. And we're working really hard at Ledger for these programs to sort of disappear. So I'm not going to claim it's the case yet because it's not. And the example that you just gave, and you know what you went through, it is worrisome. Like you know, and it's not the experience that midterm we want our users to have. And I think we can achieve that without becoming a bank, because obviously the easier way would be, okay, well now trust me with your coins, and you know you call me if there is a problem. You flash your ID and then, you know, I know it's you, so I return your coins. That probably would be the easy way out, but it's not the way that we're looking for. We're looking at something that is much more sophisticated, where you still be in charge, you still be in control, you have your private keys, but you're right. There are things that we will do, so it will be easier to use. You have even more peace of mind than what you can have today, but it's not an easy problem to solve. So it's something that will be solved in the course of the next sort of 2 years. And I think, you know, people often ask, like, you know, what's between, you know, now the next bull run and you know, the, you know, everyone has Bitcoin. I think, you know, this is the main problem that the industry has to solve. And I think Ledger is very well positioned to help the industry solve that at the global scale, because we have a global business. We sent our product in more than 165 countries. So, you know, if there is one company in the world right now that can help solve that problem, definitely Ledger is one. I'm not saying that we are the only one, but we can definitely be one. And we have certain ideas on how to do this, but now it's, you know, I don't want to give any fake news right now, so I'm not gonna comment furthermore. But we understand the problem, and we are trying to fix it, and we will eventually help with that problem down the road. So people will be as safe with their ledger than they are with their bank, but still owning their private keys, owning their digital life, because we believe that's the most important thing.
I have a couple of user questions here, so and a little bit more straightforward, maybe not as spring loaded and emotional. But the first one is: are you planning to support multi-sig setup for regular users? And this goes back to the ease of use, right? It's currently possible, but it's not necessarily extremely simple from a non-technical user standpoint. It's not, you know, the most intuitive process going through Ledger Live. It takes a bit more of an advanced user to even understand, you know, where to start here.
Yeah, 100%. So our philosophy is we don't build our products for developers only, because you know, we love developers, and we have a bunch at Ledger, and of course developers can, you know, are very sophisticated in the way that they can handle the product. And so we're designing the product for the next bull run, and you know, sort of my mother who actually bought Bitcoin like a few weeks ago now, so very happy for her. But there's no way that she can handle a Ledger Nano right now, but she should at some point. Mm-hmm. And so why we're trying to design the product for mass adoption. Because otherwise, if we don't design the product for mass adoption, there is no, you know, from a business perspective, the market will be too niche. And two, we don't think we'll be, you know, the mission of Ledger is to design products that are safe and easy to use. And that's our mission. And, you know, the vision is those critical digital assets that will go way beyond Bitcoin. So we think it's a revolution, just not because of Bitcoin and the value of money, just because people need to repossess those critical digital assets. And so that needs to be done at scale for everyone. And so therefore, you know, the mission of security and ease of use is really what's at heart for us. So when we think about, you know, sort of multi-sig and integrating new services to make it easy to use and sort of safer, and especially when it comes to those very critical security issues, we're thinking of designing it so everyone can use it, and not just the happy few.
This kind of bridges the two different questions, that previous one and then the one that I asked about minimizing complexity. Has your team been active in recovery services or actually helping early users, early holders of Bitcoin with either troubleshooting or upgrading their systems? Because you look around at the number of coins that have gone unmoved for many, many years now, and the resting assumption is either that they're lost or they're just kind of super long-term holders and speculators that just have them deep in cold storage. And I don't know that anyone has a really good grasp, or I certainly don't, of where the custodial split is between exchanges and their various, hot and cold wallets, third-party custodians, bona fide vaults like the old Zappo and BitGo and other third-party solutions, and then self-custody, whether it is in the old Bitcoin wallets or an Ethereum paper wallet or a hardware wallet or some form factor like what you've built. You have a good sense for at least where you believe or where the best guess is, where all of these different assets are currently held and which systems they're using.
It's a very complex question what you're asking. Where is the market, how people use their coins, what do they do with it, etc. So we are trying to understand that every day, just on how people do use our products, as an example, because we're very we don't take much data from our products. We're very worried about our users' privacy. It's very important that users feel safe using the Ledger product. We will never take any data without asking permission first. We will never take any personal or sensitive data. And so I think to a certain extent, this is how the how sort of everyone works. Like, there's not much data flowing around, and the reason why you're asking these questions is because no one really knows, because it's a very secretive market, number one, and two, with Kaiko in mind, and Kaiko gather market data from exchanges, but we don't gather market data from the blockchains, because that's yet another thing to do, and there are some companies doing that, but it's very hard to aggregate all data at scale and try to understand sort of what's going on. So number one, no one gives the data. And number two, if you can aggregate all the data, it's very hard to extract value. And with Messari, you guys are very well positioned to have a better answer than anyone on the question that you just asked. But I think it's a very, very hard question right now. Why people buy Bitcoin, what do they do with it, etc. And when you refer to people buying and holding for a long time, I don't know what period of time you're referring to, but I've known people, I've started to know people in late 2013, 2014 in the Bitcoin community. And as far as I'm concerned, they bought their Bitcoins then and they never touched it since then. So, people are waiting for the Bitcoins to arrive to the moon, I guess.
I have a 1 and 1A question to kind of wrap up. So first off, one user question here. Are there any plans currently to use biometrics in Ledger devices?
No, actually, there is a strong plan not to use biometrics in the Ledger products, because we've discussed it recently. And it's be a great question for my CTO or Nicolas Bacard, our founder and chief innovation officer. But we don't believe much. Actually, there are different kind of biometrics. There's biometrics that costs nothing and that probably other wallet manufacturers will put on their device, and that's easy to cheat and we believe that the security level is not high enough. And then there are higher level of biometrics, but then they're really expensive, so that will make any hardware wallet unaffordable. And so therefore, it could be cool, but then your hardware wallet, I don't think you'll be too happy with the price just to use the biometrics. And plus, there are other cool stuff that we have in mind that you can implement in a hardware wallet that is just as cool as biometrics, if not better. We have good ideas for the future that are very, very, very cool.
So I guess last question that I have, a little bit more open-ended, give you a chance to shill a bit more. What are some of the kind of key releases or key new features that you'll be working towards and shipping between now and the end of the year?
I don't know what my team will say if I tell you those things. Maybe they'll be extremely unhappy with me.
Maybe a little bit more broad, high level than that, what some of the goals are or key milestones you're looking to hit by the end of the year.
I will give you an answer. It's okay. I can share some secrets. So the general idea is, you know, Ledger Live should be your main hub for your crypto. I mean, you know, right now the experience even that I had was, you know, I need to buy my crypto on Kraken, and you know, once I've done that, then I, you know, send my crypto on my Ledger, but then it's a problem because then I need to have level 4 at Kraken in order to send more than X amount of money, et cetera, et cetera. So the user experience is not, you know, fantastic, because in the end, I wanted to have my private keys, whether I'm Ledger CEO or not. Actually, I think it's why I want Bitcoin, is I want to hold my private keys. And so we're trying to sort of merge that experience into one. So through your Ledger Live, you should be able to buy, sell, swap, lend, borrow, stake. You should exhaust you also of the world. Like, we don't want to force you to use just one service. We want to provide you with every service that sort of exists. So, you know, right now, typically the buy feature, we're doing it with Coinify. We're very happy with Coinify. There's nothing wrong with them. However, you know, there are other providers in the market that probably have other currencies, other countries that they can serve better, better rates. I don't know. But so the view is, we will try to give you a very exhaustive experience, whether you want to buy Bitcoin, swap Bitcoin, et cetera, and integrate as many partners as possible. And then you as an end user, you can sort of choose which partner you want to use, which is better suited for your needs. But this idea that you will be able to connect to Ledger Live and then do your full journey through Ledger Live with the same level of security, anything, you know, whatever you do, you always have the same level of security, ease of use, and the coins will always end with you. The private keys will always end with you, is sort of the experience that we're striving for. And so, you know, right now it's cool. I think by the end of the year, it will be much better. And I think same time next year, it will be awesome. I think what we're building, and you know, we will integrate also DeFi services. So when I say, you know, buy, stakes, you know, swap, et cetera, I mean whether it's the service is offered by a centralized service and or a decentralized service. You know, for us, this is how we think. And so you have centralized value propositions on the swap competing with decentralized value propositions. And you as an end user, you'll be able to choose. But what's also very cool, and you know, people should remind that, is you can use your hardware wallet to connect with your Ledger Live experience. But there's also now a variety of third parties that you can use with your hardware wallet. And actually, your Nano S or your Nano X is the best way to connect to most of the DeFi services today. You know, we have a great integration with Starkware now. You've done a great integration with Liquid and the Green Wallet. And so whether your Ledger Live is your hub and or your hardware wallet is your hub to a few softwares that you want to use with the maximum level of security, you know, we are trying to build the best possible experience for the user, whether they use 100% Ledger products and or any other software that they want to use. So that's what we're trying to deliver to the market.
Awesome. Well, you can check out Ledger at ledger.com for the very few people, I believe, in crypto that might not already know about the company and about the hardware wallets that you're selling. Looking forward to seeing everything that comes out. I am spending a lot more time on DeFi and experimenting with some of these new applications. And obviously, the lion's share of that is probably going to be managed through a Ledger, at least the settlement. So looking forward to hopefully you guys making my life easier. And with any luck, I'll be able to recover all that garbage that I have from 2017, clear that out and convert it into other useful assets.
Yeah, we'll try. But we have a great customer success team. So, you know, and we've also recruited a bunch of people there to help our clients. So, you know, use them if there's any problem, pascal@ledger.com. But I don't do the customer service myself, but I always like to know what's going on. and I can always try to help a little bit.
Perfect. Well, Pascal, thank you very much for joining us. We'll look forward to catching up again soon, and best of luck with everything the rest of the year.
All right. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
All right. This concludes the hopefully last episode of Unqualified Opinions, where I am working from a non-desk so that my neck does not break. Appreciate everybody for tuning back in during this transition. Hope that you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe. We'll be back here on Monday. Till then, thanks again. Take care. We'll see you on Twitter.